Welcome to CFTV Live, presented by our friends at Agrigold. Jared Stansberry, joined by my friend Jeff Woody. What's up, brother? It's been a while since I've seen you.
It has been a while. I'm excited to watch Iowa State in the tournament this year.
Should I tell them?
What? They're not? They didn't make it?
They did not make it.
6 years in a row. And
I'm sorry. They didn't make it.
Well, I don't even know what I'm doing here then.
I don't know what you're doing here either.
For my basketball expertise.
See, that's why I'm going to ask you about football coaches.
Okay, cool.
What do you think about football coaches?
I think that this staff has a really uncanny way of finding things that people normally don't do and make it successful. Like the quintessential example that I have is like the volume of offers that they put out, yet still manage to not hang kids out to dry. Like you don't hear. I mean, so far, knock on wood, you don't hear of, you know, no offers being pulled and no 37 kids committing for 26 spots. Like, you don't see that so far. So they've found a way to make a high volume of offers successful for what they're doing and getting, you know, taking a mobile quarterback and replacing him with Jacob Park, who's a pocket passer, and replacing him with Kyle Kempton, being able to be efficient in offense the entire way, or taking a four down offense and turning it into three, so they can transform stuff that people normally wouldn't do, and they do a really good job doing it. So I think out of the box is the box for these guys.
Yeah, and I think that I'm actually intrigued by what they're doing here with some of the shuffling that they've done, bringing in a guy like Nate Shieldhouse, who's a
young, my age.
Yeah, he's not. I think he's maybe 2 years older than you.
He's 27, right?
I don't know.
I think he's 27 or 28.
I'm graduated in 2012. What year did you graduate?
2013.
Okay.
So it would have been, depending on birth date.
Yeah.
Let's just go with
okay, you're
age.
About the same age.
Let's just so go with the same age.
We'll just basically say that they hired Jeff Woody, except he played quarterback instead of running back.
Mm-hmm.
So Nate Shieldhouse is the new running backs coach at Iowa State. Young guy. Joe Houston's a young guy. He graduated from USC in 2010. Jeff Myers, I think, completed his playing career in Toledo at either 2012 or 2013, new offensive line coach. So they're going out and getting these young guys, and I think that this is an interesting approach for Iowa State because these guys have all shown promise at wherever they've been previously, or even if they've been in a role at Iowa State here these past several seasons. And they're going a little bit outside the box. They're like, you know, maybe some people would try and go out and make a splash hire. They're going to try and go get an established guy that was working at a lower level or something like that. No, we're going to get guys who are young, they're hungry, and we're going to help bring them up through the program.
And I think more than young and hungry, I think those aren't the two attributes that they're looking for. I think the biggest attribute is I think that they've got their system in place. Like that is the lattice is set for what their program should look like, right? And so they lose a square peg, they have to find a square peg. They're not trying to find somebody who's smarter and from a football perspective, you don't lose a five-star wide receiver who's just a big jumper, and then you find another five-star wide receiver that for whatever reason is like a quick route runner for that same position. Like, yes, you can do that, and they can, I mean, it's not exactly an apples-to-apples comparison, but they're looking for what guy fits the role that we need and what guy can we trust. So they're really, they're setting a framework for what they want and then finding the guy to plop in there, and just so happens that the guys that they trust that fit that role are young. So there's a continuity within the system that is going to allow this system to continue to be in place, because from whether it's Six Sigma or lean methodology or whatever, the system is more important than the components of that system. And so if you can make sure that that system stays in place, that they're not that you're not trying to put one person as like the key cog in this whole thing, that if one person were to leave, so what? The system itself is more important than anything else. I think that's what guys like Saban do. And so how many defensive and offensive coordinators has Nick Saban had? And you wouldn't be able to tell for a second, because a running backs coach leaves to go be, you know, Jim McElwain goes to leave, and all of a sudden plug in somebody else, and it's the exact same.
His coordinators leave every year.
Right.
You know, I mean, they're
going to
be
head
coaches. And that's the thing that's different to me between, and I think that you'll really be able to speak to this, with what was happening in the tail end of the Rhodes years to what is happening now with Campbell, is that in some of those times where they would need to fill a position, it's like these guys would just kind of come out of nowhere. It's like they'd never worked with anybody that had ever been on the staff. They really had no connection to any of them. And then all of a sudden it's just like, oh yeah, here, like, this is our new offensive line coach.
Right.
You know, and I think you can.
Don't get me started.
I was
going to
say, you know specifically who I'm talking about in that situation, but with the guys that they're bringing in are not going to try and do anything to change
the system. It is the system itself.
Right. They're not going to come in and say, oh, we run the pistol now. Like, no, that's not how it's going to
work. Again, don't get me started on that guy.
I'm not trying to get you started. I'm just using that as the example.
Right.
Is that Jeff Myers played in the same offense at Toledo. Matt Campbell was his offensive line coach. He was his offensive coordinator. Tom Manning, he's worked with him ever since they got to Iowa State. Nate Shieldhouse is a little bit different in that situation, but Joel Gordon, who's the new...
Well, Shieldhouse would have worked, but would have been at Illinois the same time that Golish was at Illinois.
So that's
so
where
was,
that connection
there is. There
is
a direct, I worked with blank.
Yeah.
I did it, this isn't, and I think when we talked about this, was it 2 weeks ago when we were looking, when Manning did leave?
Yeah, yeah.
And we were saying, you know, who are they going to get? Probably somebody that they've worked with before. It's not a... They are not going to sacrifice splash for trust. And it's, I know that I can trust you if I tell you to do a job or ask you to do a job or ask for your opinion, that you are going to give me the right opinion, the right answer, and not one that I want to hear. And it's not one that you think is, you know, what you think is above the program. It's, what are you going to do that fits this exact system? That's what I think I really like about the young guys in there, is that it is, I've worked with this guy before, whether it's as a coach or as like the old lineman that's, I coached him and then coached with him. And then with Shieldhouse is I coached him or coached with him. And it's right there of, I know exactly what I'm getting from you. It's just going to be in a cardinal and gold rather than, you know, whatever the blue and gold at Toledo.
Blue and orange.
Blue and orange.
Orange? Oh, at Toledo? Shieldhouse?
No, I was
I thought you were talking about Shieldhouse.
No.
Okay, that's my bad.
I wonder what the technical color, because cardinal and gold, I mean, everyone says red and yellow. Like, I wonder what the technical...
Probably blue and gold or...
Navy? Would it be navy?
I don't know what Toledo's...
It's a deeper blue.
Toledo's colors are, but...
We're speaking blue, and this completely off the cuff, completely has nothing to do with what we're talking about, so sorry to interrupt this, but for those that are filling out a bracket...
We're going to get back to this.
Okay, but can I say this right now, just because it's on the top of my head, and it's, if I don't, it's like tracking down fireflies, and they're just going to sparkle away. If you're going to fill out a bracket, if you have a little bit of time to fill out a bracket right now, a bracket that is going to surprise the bejesus out of you, if you fill it out, how well it does... Pick the team with the bluer logo. Don't do it as like your official submitted bracket, but just like a research, like, what does this look like?
No, you can't have more than one bracket.
Not to submit. No, just to like have by yourself, see how it does.
Can't have more than one bracket.
There's ESPN allows you 25 brackets.
Nope, can't have them.
No, it's a research. This is not when you submit.
You one bracket.
You're that guy.
Mm-hmm. I went on a tangent about this on our podcast.
See, I have one bracket that I actually grade. Like, the teams that I will root for, like, oh, this is the one that I'm doing. The other ones are really completely joke brackets. One of which always does super poorly. One of which always does super well. And the other one's just really fun to do. Brackets always, I have five brackets every year. One is the one that I actually root for. So that's my gut bracket. The second one is what I want to happen. Completely, like, independent of what should happen. So, like, I want, a lot of times, say, like, Kentucky is a one seed. I want a 16 seed to beat a one seed, and I want it to be Kentucky. Like, that has nothing to do. That bracket always does terrible. Third bracket is mascot fights. If a bulldog fought an eagle, what would win? Like, that's the kind of thing. And then you have to play that scenario out. Usually, Iowa State does really well in that bracket because it is hard to beat weather.
You are everything that I hate right now.
I'm not submitting any of these. It's fun to see what the results are in completely arbitrary marks.
If you come in here next week,
it's like,
and you say anything like, oh, in my one bracket, I had...
No, I'm not
going to
say in my one
winning.
Bracket. It's not going to be I called this, because it's 100% arbitrary. There is no skill, luck, or whatever picking to it. So, by the way, do you want to know what the best team... They're not in the tournament this year. The best team in the mascot fights bracket, it is literally unbeatable. Green Bay. You want to know why? They're the Phoenix. You know what a Phoenix is?
Yeah.
It's literally an unkillable mythological creature.
Anybody who's ever seen Harry Potter knows what a Phoenix is.
Yeah.
Come on. Do I know
unkillable.
What a Phoenix is?
Then the last two brackets, one always does really well and one always does really poorly. What team is bluer? I mean, literally, look at the logo. What team has more blue on it? And when in doubt, when it's like green versus yellow, generally go to like on the color palette, like if you were to do like a little color wheel, like which one is closer to blue.
Get your Pantone wheel out.
Yep, get your Pantone wheel out. Which one's closer to blue? That bracket was my best bracket last year in the 94th percentile, because if you think about it, Duke, North Carolina, Virginia, Kentucky, Kansas, Villanova, all of them are blue. And so if you pick the bluer team, the one exception is you get one exception, the blue bracket is always pick a one seed right away, because that never, like, that'll throw everything off. So always pick a one seed right away, but then outside of that is blue bracket. And then the other one is the exact inverse, the red bracket. That was in the fourth percentile last year because Dayton went to the Final Four and won it.
Fortunately, this season, all of the number one seeds do wear blue. So
exactly.
There you go.
Exactly. And the two seeds would be North Carolina, blue. Two seed,
Cincinnati,
not blue, not good for Cincinnati. Duke, blue. Next
champion.
Two seed, Purdue, not great. So basically, Purdue and Cincinnati are the only two top two line seeds that aren't blue. The blue bracket always does well. I guarantee you, if you pick which team is bluer, that is probably, if you are somebody that fills out multiple brackets, your blue bracket is probably in your top, say you fill out 10, it's going to be like your number two, 1 through 3.
All right, well, getting back to football coaches, I can't remember where I wanted to go now, because we've gone a long ways away from where I wanted to go.
You're welcome.
I wanted to talk, I think, about quarterbacks.
Or was it running backs?
I don't remember. It's been 5 minutes now since we were on this.
Five brackets. Want, or your gut bracket, your want bracket, blue, red, mascot fights.
Oh, I remember what
those
it was
are your five brackets.
Okay, so last year, Jeff Myers, the new offensive line coach, mm-hmm. was the guy who was in charge of being the on-field, handling the rotations, like that kind of stuff with the offensive line, while Tom Manning was up in the booth. Am I crazy if I think that him being a guy on the field now, being the offensive line coach down on the field, I think will be beneficial to the offensive line?
I think it couldn't hurt.
Yeah.
Because the one thing that offensive line is different, we've talked about this before, the thing that's different with offensive linemen versus, say, a quarterback. Like a quarterback, it may be more beneficial to have the quarterback's coach up higher,
yeah.
because you're looking at coverages. It's less about feel and more about like the literal X's and O's, the black and white of this is a cover two. They're playing a lot more cover two. When they do play cover two, you can see the corner shade inside. That's a key. That's a tell that you're going to be able to see. But offensive line is a lot more about feel.
Yeah.
Like there is a lot of X's and O's you have to see, like where, whether it's a three technique or a shade or a nose or wherever you can, that's a lot of stuff to see, but X's and O's are really hard, are a lot harder on the offensive line, because it's like, hey, I can see that that's a three technique, but this SOB is strong and he's really good at crossing my face. So even though upstairs it looks like I should be able to handle this guy, he's crossing my face right now. We're going to have to eliminate that. And that interaction between a coach and a player of being like, look, this isn't a good play, even though it looks like a good play from up there. And so that interaction of being like, okay, I see what your problem is. I can see how we can handle that. And then you talk all five together, which you always will see, you know, whether it's you're watching some football thing, there's the coaches sitting and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, yeah. five guys talking to each other, because they have to all be on the same page right now, where the quarterbacks, like, they're sitting next to each other, but it's less of a we're talking to each other, it's we're talking at one guy,
yeah.
being like, this is what we see, you should see too.
See, and that's what I was going to say, is it's easy for the quarterback to get on the headset and talk to the quarterback's coach mm-hmm. or whoever is sitting up in the booth just one-on-one, whereas it's way easier for whoever's sitting in the booth to talk to the offensive line coach, and then he stands there and talks to all five offensive linemen. Rather than, I mean, not the center is talking to the offensive line coach who's up in the booth or
right.
something like that. You know?
Right. And because, like I said, there's what you see and what you get are two really different things, especially because you're lined up that far apart from each other and everybody wants to get this much of an advantage. Like if we're looking head on and I'm here, this is a pretty neutral position. If I get here as a defensive lineman and this is my offensive lineman, I have an advantage over you. I mean, it's that far, that much,
mm-hmm.
and these dudes are huge. And so a lot of this like theoretical stuff, if you're lined up nose to nose or eye to eye, that's a big difference between like this much. And so I don't think it's going to make a huge monumental difference, but I think having the offensive line coach down, it's what we always had when Coach Blyle was there, and then when the other guy, when Klonakis was there, when he was on the field too, but that no one liked him. But when Blyle was there in the early Rhodes years, he was always down on the field, and he was always the ones that are like again, sit all five guys down, talk to him. What do you see? What do you feel? What do we need to do?
Yeah.
And then he'll take that information and relay it upstairs when you get five perspectives on exactly what's going on. I'm sure that's how it was last year, but the offensive line coach, the one that knows them the best, is the one that should have the say in it. Because say the exact same scenario is, hey, I got a three technique. He's really fighting hard over my face. I don't know if I can get there. If the coach has a couple ways to go about that of saying, like, I know that it's hard. You've got to get it done. That we can't let you not get that done. If he knows the guy can do it, but then if it's a GA, he doesn't know that guy as well. Where the other option is, okay, I know you're doing your absolute best and it's still not working. We're going to have to game plan around this because I know you, I know your skill set and I know your attitude. If you're really trying your best and you just can't get it done, let's find a way around that. But if you're not trying your best, I know you well enough that I'm going to pull that out of you. So having the coach itself rather than a GA on the field will make a little bit of difference, and I think it will help. It's not going to be like a monumental game changer, but it should be a thing that's a little bit more advantageous.
See, and I do think that that's something that will be beneficial in the fact that they won't have I don't think Jeff Myers is going to be the offensive coordinator.
No.
You know, like, he's going to be purely focused on coaching the offensive line.
How do I get this combination block from the center and the guard to go all the way backside to this backside linebacker when the backside linebacker is stunning? How do I solve that problem? It's not how do I get a better play called? How do I work around this? And I'm not saying this is bad. Like, a lot of offensive line coaches that are coordinators are really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
It is 6-1 way, half dozen the other. But it's when the guy's main focus.
Well, yeah, Campbell did it himself.
Right. And so the focus of this, the having an offensive line coach, especially as a young guy, to literally your only job, solve that problem. You got our backside linebacker run throughs. We're trying to get this combination block from point A to point B. This point B, because of what the linebacker's doing, is not happening. Solve that. Mm-hmm. Make that problem go away. So that rather than, okay, that's destroying the whole play, what play do we have to correct this? It's not what play do we change, it is what method do we manipulate, or what technique do we manipulate, or what guy do we manipulate to get to that problem?
For sure. And then another thing with this staff that's, I think, going to be unique is from what Campbell said last Friday when we talked to him, and this is just based on the things that, the discussions that we had.
This is a tea leaves, not a statement.
Is that if they name an offensive coordinator, it's not going to be until after spring. To you, as being a former player, is that odd? Like, the fact that someone will not actually be the offensive coordinator? Or do you think that it's kind of interesting, the fact that everybody is going to have some sort of say in how the offense is run?
As long as there is a buck stops here moment, or buck stops here spot, that somebody is making the final call, or everybody has a distinct role of that to do, so I know how to interact with the solution. So I don't think it's a problem if, let's hypothetically, running backs coach is going to be responsible for watching the clock and updating whoever is deciding to make the play call. So, like, say Campbell is hype again. I have absolutely no idea how this is going to work, but let's say theoretically, it's 2nd and 7, and Campbell goes, I want run. Then somebody is going to be responsible for looking at the front, relaying the front to whatever. Next person is going to be responsible for straightening the personnel. Next person is going to be responsible for actually making the play call. And so I don't know who each one of those people are and what that's going to look like, but if you have information, outcome, then as long as you know what each one of those people are doing, there is going to be no hang-up. Because the problem is then you get 3rd and 4, 3rd and 3, and one guy wants to run the ball, one guy wants to throw the ball, one guy wants play action, and one guy wants, you know, to slow down and make sure we get the right front and then check and then do another one. You've got four different opinions. If there is no buck stops here, then all four of those opinions are equally valid. So there has to have somebody that is making the final call as to what the play is, because if there is disagreement, you've got 40 seconds to, from the time the ball is downed to the time the next play has to go. You've got 40 seconds. If there are four opinions, one has to be prevailing. And that's why, like, coordinators, generally speaking, are the thing. Because if three guys don't like it and one guy does, but the one guy's the coordinator, piss off, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
But if and there is no head one play caller guy, then four opinions are equally valid. Then those three are going to win. All of a sudden, you're going to have to take a time. You're going to be out of timeouts 4 minutes into the first quarter because you wasted too much time. So as long as there is a buck stops here, as long as there's a guy who has final say in the play call, which I would assume would be Campbell.
I was going to say, I think that he probably has had more say in things than in the past several years than what we maybe realized.
And I think the other thing, as long as there's the next part of that, as long as there's cohesiveness in what the game plan is, because everyone's heard, especially offensive, the coordinator jobs, the play calling jobs are, it's chess. It is, I'm going to move here and we're going to take a first and 10. Obviously, you don't want to get behind the chains in first and 10. So say it's second and 5. We're going to roll the dice a little bit. If we take a 2 yard loss because we're setting up this play, two quarters down the road, we've set this play up 3 to 4 times. All of a sudden, we're coming around the backside and then we're going to score on it. Mm-hmm. So as long as there is a complete continuity between, say, the four guys by committee that are planning to do this, that they understand the every intention of why plays are being called the way they are, that the chess game is being played by four guys at the same time, not four separate chess boards. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's the benefit of, you know, Campbell being with Brian Gasser for as long as he has, and Alex Golish, mm-hmm. and having Jeff Myers, having played for him, like these guys have all been together so long. Even Joel Gordon, the new new quarterback's coach, is a guy who has been an analyst with this staff. He's been around this offense mm-hmm. for several years, you know. So mm-hmm. it's all of these guys have been around each other for quite a while at this point, to where they do, I think, have some of that understanding with each other of how they like to do things
right.
and how they. What the philosophies are right. that prevail in the end.
And that does make, and again, as long as, and because Campbell was an offensive line coach and a coordinator for a while, you would assume that he would be the guy that is the be-all, end-all play caller.
Yeah.
Of this is what we're going to run, you know, spread right, X, Z, whatever. We're going to run this play. And everyone, if he says we're going to run this play, yes, sir, got it.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what it ends up being. But I think the margin for error with something like that is a lot smaller, but the peak is just as high. Mm-hmm. So you can still do it and you can still spread out that responsibility. There is no, like, there's not going to be a drop in production on that, but it is, if all four guys are on the same page, you're going to be firing on all cylinders. If two of the four guys are on the same page and two of the four guys are on a different page, well, all of a sudden, then that creates doubt in whatever the call is. So I think they can do it because this staff, like we said, has been unconventional. They've been great at handling unconventional because they prepare like nobody's business.
All right, we need to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We'll talk a little bit about the NCAA tournament when we come back here on
Blue Bracket.
CFTV Live presented by Agrigold.
Hey guys, we'll get you back to the Cyclone Fanatic podcast here in a few minutes. I want to tell you a little bit about a story. I was hanging out with Dr. Michael Kruger from Ames Eye Clinic and Des Moines Eye Care a couple weeks ago. We had lunch. And I told Dr. Kruger, hey man, I hadn't been to the eye doctor since I was like a kid. And I thought back to it. I mean, it's been like at least 25 years since I've gone to the eye doctor. Because my eyes seem fine. Like, I can see. It's not like, you know, I have walk around squinting all the time. But I have headaches a lot. You know, I stare at a screen like 12 hours a day. That can't be good for me. So here's what we're going to do. Coming up in March, later on this month, I'm going to go get my eyes checked. And I'm going to show you guys why it's important to do, how easy it is, and also that you got a cool Cyclone fan in Dr. Kruger who you can go and hang out with. Nothing scary about it. They accept many medical and vision insurance plans at the Ames Eye Clinic in Des Moines Eye Care. Got those two convenient locations, DesMoinesEyeCare.com, AmesEyeClinic.com. Same week appointments. I'll let you guys know how it goes. I could be in glasses the next time you see me. It'll be worth it, though. Go give them a shot. Ames Eye Clinic, Des Moines Eye Care. Dr. Kruger. Now back to the podcast.
Welcome back to CFTV Live. Jared Stansberry and Jeff Woody. You filled out your bracket.
I did.
You were a diva. I had to print your bracket for you.
I don't have a printer.
I don't have a printer either. Came to the office. Nope. I printed it.
Yep. Cool. Thanks.
You could have... I sent you a link. You could have gone to the link. It was a PDF. You could have edited the PDF on a computer or a smartphone.
Could have.
I've given you multiple solutions to this. Then you could have sent it to me. I could have printed that. You wouldn't have had to write it.
I have one.
I'm going to take my pen back.
Right here.
Look, it's a very special pen. Super Bowl, Minnesota. I'm like, I want to keep that. Intern Jackie brought it to us.
That's nice of her.
Yeah. It has very good writing smoothness.
Odd shape.
It is an odd shape.
It's a...
It actually makes my hand hurt when I write with it, to be completely honest.
It's not a circle. It's an oval, which makes writing with it strange.
All right. Let's hear about your picks. Who you got in your final four?
So my final four is Virginia, North Carolina, Purdue, and Duke, which violates one of only one of them violates the blue rule.
I was just gonna say that one of those is not like the
one
other.
One of them violates the blue rule, but I think Purdue has from a 1,000-foot view. I think Purdue has.
You didn't make a pick,
huh?
You didn't make one of your picks.
Oh, Florida versus Texas.
Texas Tech.
Excuse me.
Oh, there you go. I like that pick. I have Tech in the Elite Eight.
I don't know if. So one of the things that so Zach Spears, friend of the program, Zach Spears, he does color for Boston College, and one of
how
things,
did he end up with that job?
It's a hard work, man. Okay. Dude works all the time.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's like all over the place.
Yeah, he works all the time. And one of the things that he brought up a good point, and he knows basketball obviously better than I do. And one of the things that he said is that which I picked Virginia as my national champion because one I love Tony Bennett.
Did you know that DeAndre Hunter is hurt?
Nope.
Yeah.
Cool. That really throws this wrench in this whole plan. But I still feel like Virginia's, the way they play, Matt fills this role that defense wins championships in every sport but basketball. You still have to have a really good defense, but winning every single game of the tournament, 52-47, isn't going to happen because basketball is one of the very, very few sports that elite defense doesn't always win. Elite offense will always win. Like Steph Curry, if he's on fire, you can put a hand right there and he can still make the shot. Like theoretically could still make the shot. There's no, like in football, there's times when you physically cannot move the ball. And Ndamukong Suh is dominating somebody, you can't. The ball cannot be delivered anywhere. So elite defense will win almost every time in football, but in basketball, you have to be able to do both. And I think that's why teams like, that's why I like a Virginia is because they can score if they have to. They'd prefer to keep it 61-54, but they can score if they have to. And I think Purdue is a similar thing where they, I think more, they have the ability to have a high level defense and to have a high level offense rather than just one or the other, which Tech scares me because I don't know if they can score.
Can I poke some holes in your argument?
Sure.
You bring up the Golden State Warriors thing. The Golden State Warriors didn't become a great team until they learned how to play defense.
Correct. I'm not saying that defense isn't important. I'm saying defense is very important, but in a tournament like this where you have to win every single game to get to the national championship, you're going to have to play in, you know, how many games, what is that, six games? One,
yeah,
two,
six
three,
games
four,
to
five,
win the
six,
title.
Six games to win a title. You're going to play, say Virginia wins the title. Four of those games, they're going to be able to dictate the pace. And they're going to be able to do what they want to do. Like Wisconsin, when Wisconsin was playing, you know, the Kaminsky years.
Yeah.
And Wisconsin, like, of those games, because they made the Final Four, lost in the Final Four, correct?
They made the Final Four, lost, and then the next year they came back and made the championship
right.
game and lost.
And so in those, say, five, six games they played, three of them are going to be exactly what they want, and the other team is going to just be suffocated, and they're going to win 47-41. Like,
yeah.
They're going to play that game. But at some point, somebody on the other team, despite your defense, is going to go off for 31 because it's the tournament. You have really good players in there. So you've got to be able – you have to have lockdown defense. You have to be able to play that. But there are going to be times where you can't exclusively rely on just how good you are on defense to make the other team stop because of other players. So I'm not saying the defense isn't important. It's a prerequisite to even get in the conversation. But once everybody – once all really good defenses are in the conversation, the teams that also have the capacity to score when they have to are going to be the ones that end up winning, which is why teams like a Virginia I like.
See, and this is what I had Virginia in the championship game as well before DeAndre Hunter got hurt, and this is what scares me about that. He averaged 9 points a game coming off the bench for Virginia. And we've had this discussion before. How many points 9 points is for the Virginia Cavaliers? They average like 70 points a game.
Right. And that's big. That's including blowouts.
Exactly. I don't think they've allowed a team to score 70 points the entire season. So that's what I'm saying is if he can't play, if they can't get to 70, then but the other team is scoring 65, all of a sudden their margin for error goes down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't matter how good your defense is.
Right.
If you can't score 65 points, you're not going to win many games.
Right. That's, I think we're saying, we're arguing the same thing.
And that's what worries me about that is that, I, like I said, I had them in the championship game. I found that out. And I was like, I don't think their offense is going to be good enough to get them to that point. I had Arizona beat them in the Sweet 16. And now I have Arizona playing for the national championship.
But that's why a team like Texas Tech worries me.
And I understand
if they can't, if Texas, you know, if a team scores 66 points, mm-hmm. can Texas Tech win that game?
Texas Tech, the thing I like about Texas Tech is they have one guy who's got some Kemba in him. You got to have one of those.
I don't care. Give me the ball.
Yeah.
We're down by 13 with 46 seconds to play. There you go.
I don't know about 13 with 46 seconds to play. That would be
an exaggerated situation. That would be a Northern Iowa situation.
Yeah, that would be a Northern Iowa situation. But I'm saying one guy that can say, get on my back, I'm taking us, we're going. You know, like Kemba had an 11-game stretch that year that made him a legend.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically all it was.
And the dirtiest step back in recent memory.
On, what's it, McGee. I can't remember. I can never remember.
JaVale?
No, I don't think it was JaVale. But I just remember his last name was McGee. It made him fall down for Pittsburgh. One of the best Pittsburgh teams of all time.
The Jamie Dixon Pittsburgh team.
Yeah. RIP Pittsburgh basketball at this. RIP Stallball, Kevin Stallings. Who knows where Kevin Stallings will go next. But yeah, that's why I like Tech, because I think that they've got that one guy. And I feel like there's always that one team that's got one guy. And I think to really win the championship, you have to have that one guy that you can that can put you on, like can put the team on his back. UNC's got Joel Berry. UVA has Kyle Guy. Arizona has DeAndre Ayton. Duke has Marvin Bagley. Villanova's got Jalen Brunson and Mikhail Bridges. Purdue has a couple different guys who are solid, but I don't think they have that one guy who can like put the team on his back.
I don't know enough about basketball to pick. These are all completely gut, like
yeah, no, I understand.
And I think the other thing,
I'm just reacting to your bracket and I'm telling you what I think about it.
And the other thing that I will try and do with these, like whenever I'm like, I don't know who's gonna win, is who's been there before, who's done it, like, because I feel like especially from a coaching staff standpoint, like, which is why like TCU and Michigan State. Like, I think TCU is a solid team, and they're pretty good.
Think about what Jamie Dixon does in the tournament every year.
But also think
not
about
a whole
what,
lot.
Think about what Tom Izzo does in the tournament
That's what I'm
every
saying.
Year. And so when in doubt, like, all right, Tom Izzo versus other person, advantage Tom Izzo, which is funny because then you get Tom Izzo versus Mike Krzyzewski. I think is that how you pronounce it?
It's Krzyzewski? Close enough, yeah.
Okay, Krzyzewski.
Casey's a big Duke person. I don't think she's listening, though. Yeah.
I was kidding.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
The sarcasm.
See, but that also falls back to UNC. If they make it to the national championship game, Joel Berry will have played in 21 NCAA tournament games in his college career.
He's done it before.
Which would be, I believe, the second most behind Christian Laettner.
Who went to the other school in that state.
He did. He did. And he went to 4 Final Fours in his career.
Which is absurd.
He played in 1 fewer games than the absolute maximum possible NCAA tournament games in a college career.
It's more than I played.
That will never happen ever again. I can't imagine it will ever happen ever again. Because if someone is that good,
they're
going
to start, go to the NBA
or
right
start
now.
Or play in 4 Final Fours, yeah, they'll be in the NBA.
Yeah.
After at
it's
least
a record
two or three
a
seasons.
A record that's never going to get broken.
Exactly. Well, obviously, because it literally can't be broken. Unless someone 1 year plays in the first 4 and then gets all the way to the championship.
But that's why I said it's not going to get broken. It could, theoretically, one would think, like if Kemba, like the, you know, the 10 seed, if that one goes all the way through.
Right, if a VCU team had made it to the championship. All right, well, we've just talked ourselves in circles, I think. But I have Duke winning the championship. So I agree with your pick of having Duke in the championship game, but I have them winning the game over Arizona. Okay.
Duke, Virginia, North Carolina, Purdue. Very low level of confidence in any of these.
I have Villanova in that spot, Arizona in that spot, and that's all the only differences we have, basically.
In the entire bracket.
I have Cincinnati right there.
I did take a Montana over Michigan 14-3, because there's got to be something in there.
See, what's funny is that
something in there.
I like that pick, but there's also a lot of people that have Michigan in the Final Four, which I don't like that pick. I think that's a little bit, it's a little getting a little crazy there. You're getting a little too bracket bustery for me.
See if there's anything else in there. Oh, one other thing is I feel really...
No respect for TJ Otzelberger. I will note that.
He is a solid player. One of the big fellow.
He's not... Yep.
What?
Did you say that he is the player?
No,
he has a... Okay,
I thought you said
he is the player, and I was like,
no,
wait.
No. I think he's expired his eligibility.
He has, yeah.
No, he has a solid player, which
Mike
makes
Dom,
me...
Correct?
Which gives me a little bit
The Dominator.
Which gives me a little bit of pause in that one, but anyway.
He also has the Chris Williams mojo behind him.
Which really doesn't lend itself well as...
Have you seen the video of Chris...
No.
On national television during the Summit League championship game.
No, I have not, but mm-hmm. I'm really not surprised mm-hmm. whatsoever.
I'll see if I can get my hands on it. I'll send it to you.
I deleted the Twitter. If you remember
that. I'll send it to you. We talked about this, but yep. I have your phone number, so
I'm gonna delete my phone too.
You just got a new phone. We talked about this too. All right, man. I'll see you next week.
All right.
We can talk about basketball again.
Okay.
We can probably talk about spring football too, because if you didn't know, that starts on Wednesday.
Woo.
It also happens to be the same day that the Wingstop opens in Ames, owned by Seneca Wallace.
That is, why does everything nice happen when I leave places? Sally Spoke, brand new high school, year after I leave. Ames gets a Wingstop a couple years after I leave. Whole Lincoln Way, Welch thing, bleep, gets nice right after I leave. This is a trend.
I don't know. I mean, Welch is not that, I don't think it's any better than it ever was before.
It's cleaner.
Well,
it
yeah.
doesn't look like the
well,
buildings are
none of the
collapse.
Places anyone actually goes are any cleaner.
That's true.
Still the same places. And they're still dirty.
Your feet stick to the floor.
Shout out to Welch Ave, though. All right, I'll talk to you next week. We'll talk spring football.
Sounds good.
Talk to you guys next week as well. Thanks to AgriGold for being the presenting sponsor of CFTV Live. Peace.